A big Vulcan hello to everyone out there. This is the Shuttlepod Podcast. I am your host, Kayla Iacovino, and as always, I am joined by Brian Drew.
Hello, everybody.
Jared Whitley.
Hello, friends.
And Matt Wright.
Hey, everybody.
The Shuttlepod Podcast is brought to you by the humans at Bye Bye Robot, purveyors of fine art from the future. Bye Bye Robot sells officially licensed Star Trek art made by multiple artists in many different styles at prices starting around $25. Go to byebyerobot.com to learn more. All right, so this is a very special episode of the Shuttlepod Podcast for us. It is our very first Shuttlepod at the Disco podcast. Yeah. And that, of course, means that Star Trek Discovery has aired. We've seen it. We've seen the first two premiere episodes, and from now until November, when Discovery goes on hiatus, the Shuttlepod Podcast will be dedicated to talking about each of the episodes just after they air. And this is therefore the Shuttlepod of the Disco episode number one. Today we're going to be talking about the first two episodes of Star Trek Discovery. That is episode one, The Vulcan Hello, written by Brian Fuller and Akiva Goldsman, story by Brian Fuller and Alex Kurtzman, and directed by David Semmel. And episode number two, Battle at the Binary Stars, written by Aaron Harberts and Gretchen J. Berg, with story by Brian Fuller, directed by Adam Kane. So today, we're going to sort of go over, there's a lot to unpack today, right? Because it's a brand new, not just a new episode to talk about, but an entire new series. We've been looking forward to this for years now, isn't it? So there's a lot to talk about, but basically we're going to be talking about several different aspects of these first two episodes in the context of how well do these episodes set up the rest of the series, Star Trek Discovery. So we're going to go around and give our initial reactions to the show. We're going to talk about fan service, little nods, callbacks that we saw. And then we're going to take a look at things like character development, world building, how this new universe has been set up for us, and finally, how does Discovery fit into the pre-existing canon? So let's start right off the bat. I know everyone probably has a ton that they want to say. Initial reactions. Brian, why don't we start with you? What is your initial reaction of Star Trek Discovery?
I guess I'm kind of ambivalent about it. I didn't love it. I didn't dislike it. I don't quite know what to make of it yet. So, there you go. I don't have a firm grasp on the show yet.
And we should just, I just want to interject here too, that this is Monday, September 25th that we are recording this episode. So, all of us just watched the episode about 24 hours ago. So, it's still pretty fresh. And I don't think, has anyone watched it twice?
No.
Nope.
No. Haven't had time. I wanted to very much, but simply ran out of time.
Yeah. Same for me. So, all right. How about you, Jared? What did you think of Star Trek Discovery episodes 1 and 2?
My initial reaction is positive. I enjoyed it. I thought they did a good job of telling its own story, so it's not all just set up. I really liked how they didn't... I mean, like, there's in other pilots, like, every character has some kind of moment where they, like, clearly state, this is my motivation and backstory and exposition to someone that who should probably already know these things, right? Like, I'm specifically thinking Emissary does that a little bit too much. Whereas with this one, there's, you know, like Monique Pancholi's character is there. We don't know how important he will be in the future, but he's just kind of there. And the episode keeps its focus on, I guess, the main people, which are Burnham, of course, Michelle Yao, sorry, I can't remember, Saru, and then Tecumseh, right? And so I thought it was very focused like that, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Matt?
I really liked it. I think I also, it's kind of weird to finally see this thing that I've been picking apart in articles finally come to life. So that was both cool and slightly surreal because I've probably had my head like kind of too deep, buried deep into this in a way. So it was actually really cool to see it all. Kind of like Brian, though, the more I pull back, the more I need to like think about it again. But I did really like it. Like, it was generally positive.
It's interesting. I feel like there's almost been a spectrum of responses. I loved it. I flat out loved it. I really, really enjoyed it. I knew that in the moment that I was watching it, I was kind of psyched up because, like you were saying, Matt, like we've been diving into this thing for so long. There was so much anticipation. And so seeing it, you know, hearing the music, seeing these characters that I feel like we almost knew a little bit, was like exciting. And so I knew that that was coloring my reaction to it a bit. But at the same time, I sort of let that happen because I was enjoying it. You know what I mean? So I was like, I should let that color my vision if it's going to be in a positive way. So for me, I just mm-hmm. like, I had a fantastic time watching it.
Good.
This is perhaps a poor analogy, but I'm going to make it anyway. It reminded me of when I saw The Force Awakens in theaters. For me, that felt like there had been this huge gap in the Star Wars universe in time. And it felt like seeing, A New Hope for the first time. And there were, plenty of criticisms about that film and plenty of criticisms about Discovery episodes 1 and 2 as well. But it felt like watching a Star Trek episode that I had never seen before. And that's a feeling that I haven't had in a very long time.
Yeah, very true on that part. It was very cool for that, for sure.
So speaking of reminding us of old feelings and nostalgia, and perhaps this maybe is a good segue because Star Wars is known for perhaps egregious amounts of fan service. What did we think about that type of thing in Discovery? So like callbacks, you know, things like in Star Wars, it's like way too much. It's like, hey guys, do you remember lightsabers?
Yeah.
Do you remember them?
Hey guys, blue milk again.
Do you remember 3D chess? Yeah. Buy our toys, please. Please buy more toys.
Well, and every character somewhere
Mikkel,
has to
that's
say
all in The Force Awakens.
Yeah, oh, I know. I think that's a huge flaw in that. Personally, I thought I was rolling my eyes pretty hard every time they brought out the blue milk. But what did you guys think in Discovery? Was there too much blue? What was the blue milk level of Discovery?
I was happy with the self-restraint. They could have hit us over the head with a lot more references than they did. There were just a few little things, and I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I was really, really happy with it because I felt it was very minimal. I think there's probably one moment that we've all been wanting to talk about, which is the delta in the sand. Do we want to?
Yeah, go for it.
Is there anyone who didn't think that was kind of stupid?
It was. No, and it was even dumber is because Giorgio wouldn't tell Burnham what she was doing.
Well, like, and it's not, it's really dumb because Burnham is this very astute person. She should have figured out that they're making a pattern, honestly.
Right?
Right?
But like, boy, oh boy, you know how long they must have been walking?
Right, yeah. It was huge.
Hours. It's huge.
Gigantic.
Yeah. Yeah, and they did it in like 5 minutes. But then there's obviously we're missing the obvious flaw, right? Which is if the ship can't see them through the clouds, how can it see a giant delta in the sand?
Right, it can't. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And they just happen to emerge from that cloud layer, like right where they are. It was just like pointless and stupid.
And of course, there's also a bunch of wind, so their footprints are going to get covered up very quickly.
Immediately.
But yeah, it's like, all right, whatever. It's cute, but you definitely have to turn your brain off for that. Like, that's just clever. Like, fun. Not clever. It's not clever. It's fun, though. You know, it's like,
It kind of reminded me of in Into Darkness when the ship is underwater for no reason at all.
Yep. It's exactly like that.
Same thing.
It's exactly what
you're
I think
right.
of.
You're right.
Yeah.
We should call that a Kurtzman.
Oh, totally.
They pulled a Kurtzman.
Definitely. Yeah. Good point. It is a Kurtzman.
Yeah. But, you know, that was the only moment, I think, where I thought they took the fan service too far. Other than that, I think they told a story, you know, and they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't rely on, they didn't rely on Star Trek being a thing to tell this story.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I agree.
Very true. Very happy about that.
All right, so I mean, I think that kind of gets that out of the way. We all seem to be happy with that. How about the characters? Like I kind of said, like we almost sort of had a glimpse into who they were and started to get to know them before these episodes came out. But now we've been in a room with them for 2 hours, what do we think of our characters?
I wish I had been surprised that Michelle Yao died. I wish I could have been, but the fact that they say, we've known for months, this is the captain. Oh, but here's the real captain of the ship that the show is named after. Means we've known she's been a red shirt the whole time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it there was no impact at all.
Really? I felt it. I knew it was coming, but watching it happen still made me feel, sad for and crushed for Burnham. So I thought they spent a lot of time developing their relationship. And so I sort of felt even knowing that she was going to die, I still kind of felt the weight of that loss, I think, for her.
I didn't feel the weight of the loss so much, but I did like Captain Giorgio.
Is that
say her name?
Yeah.
I liked the character a lot, actually. In fact, I liked her a lot more than I liked Burnham.
I completely agree
with
that. Really? Yeah.
Yeah, a lot more.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the writing or the acting, but I kind of struggled with Burnham.
Really?
I think it was a little of both. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I like them both just fine. Like, quite, like a lot, both of them. I saw nothing wrong with either of them. I don't know what you guys are finding wrong with Burnham, but I'm kind of wondering if it's the same thing that people were freaking out about when they saw the clips, where she's just really Vulcan, and that's kind of messing with it a little bit.
I think it is.
I think she'll loosen up. She's already loosening up a little bit, actually, by the end of the second hour, she's loosened up. A whole lot has sort of been compromised in, her worldview, but at that point, what she expected, what she already thought was happening.
Yeah, that could be. And as I said to our colleague Anthony earlier today, it's entirely possible my perspective on her will change as the show goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And, I will understand her better. But as of right now, she did nothing for me.
That's incredible. I had the opposite reaction, I think. I really, really liked Burnham. And I thought Sonequa Martin-Green's acting carried really, really well. Was, standout for me. I don't know. I wonder what it is. Maybe the more we sit with them, we'll start to realize what it is we like or don't like.
Sure.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I really loved, thinking about developing the characters going forward, I thought that right off the bat the relationship between Saru and Burnham was a standout for me.
Yeah. Their relationship.
So they're
good.
Their banter on the bridge back and forth, they're kind of jabbing at each other but in a very friendly way. And I really appreciated that's a bit of a nuanced relationship. And I thought that they carried it out really well. The acting was great. I thought the writing was great. That was my favorite, definitely my favorite relationship was watching them two on screen together.
And it helped that basically that was the only relationship that they focused in on so they could spend time with it.
That's true. Yeah, Jared, you brought up a good point of they didn't waste a lot of time spelling out for us this is my character, and this is how I feel about things, and this is why I'm here, blah, blah, blah. They just told the story. Yeah.
Except for Saru. There's the bit where he gives the ecological backstory on his planet that someone who has been working with him for months or years should already know.
True. Yeah. True.
And it's kind of a very cringeworthy, kind of phrasing, too. His quick summary is not actually very good.
I read a review today that somebody said it's he was almost reading the Wikipedia entry for Kelpians.
Exactly. That's dead on. That's totally it. I've been trying to place that, because as we know, in interviews and other things, there's a little more nuance to it than that. It's not that they're bred to sense death per se. It's that they have a heightened sense of danger,
their own mortality,
and whatnot, because of being a prey species, and they have a lot of strong sort of fight or flight response kind of thing, right? And so I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but one of the showrunners said that Saru is a binary thinker in that regard, because of the whole fight or flight thing. He's either in danger or not in danger, right? And you can see that happen multiple times, in fact, on the bridge, where he's nope, the best action is immediately to retreat, don't mess with this, don't touch it, don't get into the situation. You know, that's his default And you can see why, if this is supposed to be his race's, like, lot in life on his home planet. Like, of course the default, you know, reaction is, yeah, scurry up this tree, like, hide in this cave or whatever. Like, you don't want to get messed with by a predator species. And, of course, well, who's one of the biggest predator species around in the Star Trek mythology, you know, the Star Trek franchise? Well, Klingons, so there you go. It kind of works nicely.
So here's a question then for you guys. Was Saru right? Should they have just left?
You know, that's a good question. And I think one that's actually a pretty good, like, ethical dilemma of what happens if they leave, though, right? Because it took him with really seems like he was trying to set some stuff into action. So if it wasn't the Shenzhou, like, it's probably the next sucker that responds to something unusual.
Yeah,
you know what
so.
I mean? Right?
Yeah, I guess
so. So, I mean, that's one school of thought. I've actually seen people talk about that. And I don't know. That's a good point. And one that is actually a great point about great Trek that we should be discussing such, you know, sort of ethical things, like the ethical implications of leaving versus staying. So,
Kayla, what do you think? What's your answer to that question?
My initial reaction was like, yeah, they should have, like, gotten the heck out of there. But now Matt brings up a good point that if it wasn't going to be the Shenzhou, it was going to be someone else. So, yeah. And you can't, I mean, it's hard because, you know, the principles of Starfleet, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't want to say, let's not explore because something bad might happen. You know, obviously you want to have some level of restraint. You want to have some protections. You don't want people to get hurt, obviously. But you also don't want to restrict yourself so much with safety that you can't explore because they're out there to be explorers.
Exactly. And I think Giorgio almost says, not quite in those words, but for something along those lines to Saru at one point of like, well, look, you can't always be safe. It's not quite in those words, but she has something along those lines to him. Of like, well, yeah, but you can't always be safe. Like, and that's part of, you know, the risk of exploration in Starfleet is you just can't always be sure you're safe.
Are you trying to say, Matt, that maybe risk is our business?
Oh,
that's what the Starship's all about.
That's what the Starship's all about.
Ooh, did anyone else catch the "I'm a soldier, not a diplomat" callback?
Oh, yes. I missed that.
She says, exactly. I think Burnham says to Giorgio, that's the diplomat in you talking. What does the soldier say?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't catch that.
So to go back to that sort of being torn between the soldier and the diplomat, it's also really nice. I think we see that really nicely in Captain Giorgio when she says, no, we really shouldn't leave because we're sort of the only ship that's got, you know, it goes back to the whole TOS thing of being on the frontier, right? They're the only ship out there at this edge of Federation space. So she says, well, no, you know, we're right here right now, and what's and to get through us, and if they get through us, what you know, there's an Andorian colony not far from us, and you know, all this sort of thing. And that's actually very TOS of like Kirk would be like, nope, we're on the outer limits of like Federation space. And in fact, it's very Balance of Terror, which is something that we know that Fuller has called out as being a very influential in the first, I imagine he's specifically talking about these first two episodes, but probably the whole season in general. And it's very a Balance of Terror. It's very much like Kirk going, nope, we're not gonna, you know, this is it, we're on the edge of our space and Romulan space, and we're not going to be messed with, you know, we're going to defend our outposts. It's very much in that vein.
How about the Klingons? We haven't talked too much about the Klingons. How do they work for you guys?
I think they're all so far overboard from the original TOS idea that the Klingons are people too, that I find it a little off-putting. I mean, the thing that's so great about the Klingons is like they, from the, you know, your social commentary standpoint, is the way that they helped show that the Soviets were just like us was to make them aliens, right? And so the TOS Klingons are very, they're people. They're normal people. What's her name? When Kor and Kirk meet each other, they realize that they're cut from the same cloth. And so for it to be these extremely alien-looking guys wearing this weird armor, and, you know, burning their hands and everything, it's just a little bit too much for me. I think if you restrict it to the context of just this episode, it works and it's fun, and it's fun to watch. But my hunch with this kind of thing, or sense with this kind of thing, has always been, if you're going to make the Klingons too weird, just make them a different species.
Yeah, those are some good points. I think the prosthetics maybe were a little heavy.
Yeah, it looked like they were struggling to get the words out at times.
It did, didn't it? Like they could hardly speak or move their faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was odd. I was not expecting that.
Me neither. I think that for me, just like initial reaction, maybe like the weakest part of the Klingon thing. Some people said they didn't like the fact that it was in Klingon and with subtitles. That didn't really bother me.
Yeah,
I guess.
No, that's fine.
No,
yeah,
they're gonna show that off whenever they can. I didn't mind that.
Yeah,
I do think the scenes were too long though. Like I got bored.
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
I didn't get bored, but I do know what you guys are saying. as our dear site founder Tony wrote in his review, it started to border, and I totally see this. It started to border on Star Wars prequel, you know, Galactic Senate kind of pontification, and you can see that it really treads a line of like, okay, a little, just enough, like no more, that's fine, you know, like we understand we understand your rants, okay.
Yeah,
I did like the visuals of it though. I liked the way the like hologram meeting looked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you did get a really good glimpse of the fact that like they all look, all those houses do look very different. Something that we've heard said before, but this is the first time I actually get to see it, because you had all those leaders in sort of holographic form there, and they all really did look quite a bit different, which is pretty cool. Like we didn't get a really good look at some of them, but the one sort of closest to him, you got a pretty good look at, and yeah, they're very different. So I hope that pans out.
I really enjoyed Vok, who I will from now on call White Chocolate Klingon.
Yeah, that's exactly what
that's exactly
what he looks like. Totally,
it's like his skin is like super smooth, and like I'm just like, I was just craving candy the whole time he was on screen.
Yeah,
that was interesting though, that he was this like a rejected albino person.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. What a neat idea. Because that's never come up before, has it?
Not that I know of. So I guess Takuvma is this, you know, like you said, sort of this house.
Klingon albino?
Yeah.
No, not the albino. That's a different race,
yeah,
remember?
Oh, from the Deep Space Nine episode?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he was a separate species. I thought he was Klingon.
No, I don't think so. Okay. Well, you know what? They don't make that very clear, to be fair. They leave that very murky. But
yeah.
But you good point. I totally forgot about that until you said it, Jared. Yeah, I thought Vok was really interesting. It is one of those things that I had a debate with Tony when we were writing the article about sort of the Everything We Know About Klingons article, about just who the Torchbearer was. And he said, oh, no, it's Vok. And I was like, well, okay, that kind of makes sense because they're keeping him pretty mysterious. But I kind of didn't want that to be true. He was totally right. They made him, you know, the Torchbearer. It's fine by me, but I will say they kind of wasted the Torchbearer.
This I was about to say, yeah, no. But,
yeah, it was kind of weird.
For something that they've been playing up, and they brought, you know, his costume out to conventions.
And like we've seen this thing up close, and it is incredibly impressive. Like, and then it's wasted. It's wasted.
Are we ever going to see it again? Like, is Vok going to wear that costume, or is that it?
We'll see. I mean, those placards in the exhibit say it's quite literally for one purpose, which is like it's for him to go to the obelisk and call the 24 houses to order. Well, he did that. Okay, now what? You know what I mean? Now, maybe that's just their brief descriptions that they were doing to not give things away, but at least based on those descriptions, it sounds like they built a hell of an elaborate, very cool piece of like armor and EV suit for what? 2 minutes of screen time total, maybe? You know?
No, less than that.
Less than that, right? Like, I'm rounding up. Yeah. I'm being generous. Yeah. And that actually really bums me out and also makes me a little worried that that's not the right place they should have spent money.
Spent the money.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, why did you spend this money on this then?
How much money do you think that thing cost? Because it's like it was special.
I don't know, but
it
was
specially 3D printed.
Yeah, it's pieces that are 3D printed, pieces that are custom sculpted. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy.
So impressive.
It's very impressive.
It's gorgeous, but it's like you did like if you're not going to do a close up shot, you don't put in close up details. Like that's how TV
exactly.
works.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's hope they keep using it. We'll see. I mean, I was sort of saddened to see how little Mary Chifo's character, Laurel, was used in this. But that's, of course, I think, because now she gets to take the forefront now that Takumba is dead. Because she was his right-hand, you know, woman, right-hand person.
Did she even have a line?
She did. She got to say something really dramatic, like, by his side towards the end, as I recall.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, that's it?
Yeah, I think I saw her like behind, like standing behind someone else. Like I was like,
yeah, she stood
for
next
her.
To him a lot. She just stood next to him, like sort of supportively, like a lot, and that was kind of sad.
She's just there for moral support.
Considering that she seems really cool, she seemed really into it. She keeps talking about what a really great deep part she has, which I believe she does. But it just bummed me out that we didn't get to see that yet. You know, I mean, that's for the rest of the 13 episodes that are left. Okay, I get that,
right.
But. As far as the, wouldn't that be cool? Like, nope, didn't get to see that. Not yet, anyway.
So, I know there are like, a ton of different relationships we could go over. There's, like, the Burnham and Sarek relationship. There's Burnham's past with the flashbacks. There's Ensign Connor, poor guy, had, like, 3 lines.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else that you guys are, like, dying to talk about?
Well, I mean, we kind of have to talk about Sarek and Burnham, don't we?
Yeah, let's do it.
What
do you think, Brian? What do you think about this about Sarek's character and how him and Burnham's relationship worked out?
I don't feel it at all. I don't understand the point of it. I don't understand why it's Sarek and not somebody else.
Right.
Like, yeah. I don't.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it doesn't make any sense for him to be this heavily involved with a Federation starship and all this other stuff when later on we know that he had so much distaste for Starfleet
mm-hmm.
that he basically disowned Spock mm-hmm. for going to Starfleet instead of going to the Vulcan Science Academy.
Yep.
So like this, it doesn't make any sense to me that he's this involved.
Yeah, that part does not make
this,
any sense.
With this person.
Yep.
I had the same thoughts after watching it. Thinking back, I was like, actually, because we did our article about, you know, the where were they then? Where were the TOS characters during the events of Discovery? And we talk about Spock, and we talk about Sarek, and the fact that at this time, during Discovery, Spock and Sarek are not speaking to one another.
Nope.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Because, like, he did disown Spock, right? I mean, Bryce said he basically disowned him.
For the most part,
like,
yeah.
He did, right? He didn't speak to mm-hmm. him for, like, over a decade.
They said, I think, 15
something
years?
Something like 15 or 18, something like that.
Something
it's a lot
like
of
that,
time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and yet he, like, delivered... The only thing I could think in my head is like, oh, like he thinks it's okay for humans to go be part of Starfleet, but it's the fact that a Vulcan wanted to be, but it still doesn't seem to fit.
No.
Yeah, it's definitely about the species part, but yeah, it still doesn't really seem to work.
What about our Kotra communication across the galaxy?
That was a little weird.
But
it was a little weird.
Intergalactic instant messaging.
Well, it seemed like they knew it was stretching the canon. They knew it was going to stretch people's ability to set aside reality. And yet they did it anyway, even though it didn't seem 100% necessary.
Well, like interstellar transporters?
Yes, I can't help but think about that.
And,
but
and
not
magic
as bad.
Space blood.
Yeah.
Let's be fair, it's not as bad as interstellar transporters
that completely erase
the entire need for starships.
Yes, no, I agree. But it does ring a bell.
I couldn't help but
somewhat.
Think of that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But
why didn't
they like
so much
do
of that
it...
could have just been done with like a flashback?
Flashback. Yeah, I was about to say that.
Oh, sorry.
No. Go. I'm disagreeing with you.
I was just going to make a stupid joke. I was going to say I could read your mind because I put my Kotra in you.
Oh,
God. I feel sort of violated.
Yeah.
Oh.
I wasn't even aware. Very intimate experience for a Vulcan, you guys. Come on, man. Careful.
Wasn't even aware that. Was this in Vegas?
No, it was when we first met in Menlo Park. When we went
to
watch that time.
Oh, yeah. I do remember blacking out for about an hour.
Yeah.
Jared grabs you and says, remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, this podcast is taking a dark turn.
Yes, it has.
Remember when I awkwardly shoved my fingers on your face? When we were looking at it?
And my boss walked in and was like, is everything all right?
And in unison, you answered yes, because your minds were locked.
That's right. Your minds were joined.
Welcome to the Shuttlepod After Hours.
Wow. You guys, getting dark. But to go back to the whole crazy Kotrick-like connection dealio, that's total. I feel like they wrote her into the brig and then didn't quite know what to do. You know what I mean? They were like, oh, we wrote her into the brig. Like, we've written this far, and now... Well, wouldn't it be neat if her mentor could totally, you know, talk to her and give her a pep talk? Well, nope, she's in the brig, so she can't go use, you know, a normal communications method. Well, hey, they're kind of telepathic. Well, hey, you know, it's like, let's stretch that, like, out a little bit. Yeah. And they just kind of sat there, like, seeing what would stick, you know, and it's like, okay. All right, you guys, cool, but whatever.
Yeah, it just didn't seem necessary. It seemed like I would have been happier for them to stretch me that far if it were necessary for the plot, but I feel like they could have gotten away with it a lot of other ways.
Yeah. They just keep wanting to build this relationship between the two of them, sort of no matter what.
Plus, like, kind of they sort of hung a lantern on the fact that Sarek wouldn't have done that, cuz he's like, you don't think I came all the way all the way here just to give you a pep talk, or like he said something like that, you know.
Yeah,
I didn't come here just to make you feel better. It wasn't for an emotional reason, blah blah blah. And they're sort of hanging a lantern on the fact that, like, that is exactly why he was there, and he would not have done that. So it was a bit, I felt that was a bit weird.
Yeah,
because it's like, well, you're denying it, but you totally just did this, like like, that's definitely why you just appeared, you know.
They need a reason for Burnham to turn on her captain, and the only person who could push her over the edge would be her father figure.
Yeah. Yeah, this goes back to the Star Warsy stuff where he's kind of an Obi-Wan, huh?
It did have that kind of vibe to it. With a little
force powers, and he reached out and felt, you know, a disturbance.
Oh, God.
Yeesh.
Speaking,
but, and I love how she gets on the, by the way, when she gets on the hologram and she presses a button and Sark instantly appears, like he was like doing nothing else at the time.
Oh, I had the same thought.
Oh yeah, there's no calling, like, you know, waiting for someone to pick up, you know.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought.
He's like, he's just hanging out going, you rang?
Right, he's just waiting for her to call at any moment.
That's like a TV show trope anyway. Like, people don't say goodbye on TV shows, they just slam the phone out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was, I noticed that it was slightly jarring. He like answered to, it wasn't like, oh, hi, how are you? It was like, I've been expecting you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was something they did every now and again on Babylon 5, where someone would get called and they'd say, okay, hold on a second. And then the person on the other line would wait, and they'd say, okay, I'm ready. Or they'd call, and the time zones would be off, and someone would be, like, in their pajamas.
Yeah.
To represent kind of the realism of that.
So I think this is a good segue from talking about our characters and how they were set up and how their relationships were set up into world building in general. So sort of taking it, you know, this hologram thing is sort of a unique sticking point for me. I'm kind of thinking, you know, what new world did they build for us? We know that Star Trek is already a thing that existed. This universe is already very, very well established, but this new show has never been done before. We have new visuals, new technologies that didn't necessarily, that we weren't, apparently that always existed, but we weren't aware of.
Like a robot man?
Like holograms, like holo phones.
Mm.
I wasn't quite digging the holo phones,
well,
I have to be honest.
We could retcon this to say that this is the start of, say, things like that are kind of holo addicting, and then they ban it, right? But no, that's a bunch of BS. Seriously though, I don't know how you reconcile that. No, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we could get into like that, the canon aspects of it later, but yeah, it really is kind of difficult to understand how you'd have this tech now and then not have it, say, on the Enterprise D 100 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I think overall, the world building for me, I thought was something they really nailed very well. I thought they did very well with the Klingons. Some stuff we've already touched on, how they introduced all these different houses, and we got to see that they looked a little bit different, and we really got an idea that it wasn't, you know, the world felt three-dimensional to me, both the Klingon side and the Federation side. It felt like a big universe. It felt like there was a lot of details. Felt like there were a lot of moving pieces. It wasn't just the ship, the Shenzo, and the Klingons in isolation in space. It really felt to me like they were a part of the Star Trek universe. So I was really, really happy with what they did there. But there were little aspects of it that, thinking in the context of how they're setting up future episodes, that did pull me out a bit. I have to admit that the holophoning, I just thought it was stupid. Like, I just don't... It's like, you guys have heard me complain about technology, like fake technology before. It doesn't seem like the kind of technology that I would want. Like, why do I want... Also, yeah. Like, when... Oh, my God. When she's talking to Sarek and he, like, sits on her desk.
Yeah, he follows her around and, like,
interactive environment. Yeah, the hologram interacts with the environment.
But it's weird. It's weird. Yeah, it is. I just... I don't know. I just didn't... I don't know why I would want a fuzzy version of a person walking around my room.
And I know the technology is much more advanced in the future, but imagine trying to project a hologram across interstellar space.
Yeah. The buffering would be terrible.
That's actually a really weird blind spot with all of Trek, though.
It is.
For example, somehow it's easier to send the Doctor's program to various really crazy places in Voyager, a very complex program, and then they're like, oh, but it's really impossible for Starfleet to send us like data files that we need. It's like, no, this is totally backwards. What kind of BS is this? So it's a weird blind spot that has come up before in the front. Not that it's a good thing, but it's a weird blind spot that just doesn't, like, makes no technical sense, that has come up before in the franchise too. You know, it's that whole like, it just, that doesn't make any sense, you know.
How do we feel about the general tone of everything?
I thought it was a little humorless, but it didn't bother me as much as that usually does for whatever reason.
Interesting.
But it wouldn't have killed them to tell a couple jokes.
Yeah. I feel you on that.
It was definitely serious.
I was happy to see that, because we didn't know a ton about Captain Georgiou before. They weren't really saying a lot about her. And so it was nice to see her be kind of dryly sarcastic and some other kind of nice things that I wasn't really sure what we were going to get from her, you know? So that was nice.
Same. Yeah, I guess, now that I think about it, I guess I was expecting it to be humorless. And so the humor and levity that we did get felt like a really nice trait for me. I guess I'm just used to Trek taking itself too seriously sometimes. But like my favorite scene probably in the whole thing was the first scene on the Shenzo Bridge, where we see Saru and Burnham interact, and then Georgiou comes out and makes that joke like, oh, my first officer and science officer agree, like, note the date and time in your log.
Oh, yeah. That was a very Star Trek-y little joke there.
It was. It felt very TOS. Everyone's friends. Everyone's having a good time, but they're still getting their work done. And like, it felt really real to me. And the fact that came so early on in the show, I think, really helped get me on board anyway.
Yeah. And to go back to something Jared said, the nice part about all this is, like, we're dropped in the middle of a world that's built, right? Instead of this, like, expository person number one and expository person number two, you know? And it's like, we don't have time for your exposition. Like, we're living our lives, and you can start to see our relationships by just watching us, right? It's not this whole, which is another benefit to current TV style, and the fact that they feel free to not do ridiculous exposition of every character, because you're supposed to watch 13 more episodes, right? And they build. You're not supposed to have a reset button the next episode. So they don't need to squeeze in all this, like, hey, I'm so-and-so, and you can clearly see I'm this, you know, because you don't need to.
Yeah, I do want to point out one thing, with this particular show, though, is that a lot of these characters were not going to survive more than two episodes anyway, so you're not going to waste a lot of time on them.
Yeah, very true.
Oh, good point.
Fair point.
You know, I mean, now we'll see what happens. Now that the show's going to move over to Discovery, we may see a little bit more exposition.
Yeah, I have to say it's really funny to think that we actually know more about Ensign Connor from talking to Sam Vartholomeus than we do ever saw in this. Because Sam did a really good job talking about his character, and you can barely tell that's really what's going on in the character's head because, well, poor Sam's not on screen a lot, which sucks because he actually thought about it, it sounds like.
I was shocked at how little we saw him.
I thought he would have a little bit more, before we killed him. Because we knew he was going to die. Like, let's be real. We knew he was dead. But I thought he would have a little more to do,
How about the fact that we still haven't seen our titular starship and crew?
Oh, but we knew that was coming, too.
Of course, we did.
Yeah, we knew that was coming.
But she's going to have this big arc before she gets there.
For the casual fan, it seems like one of the number one... not necessarily complaints, but sort of maybe confusing points was the fact that we didn't see the Discovery. I had my friend say to me, like, oh, I thought this was going to be about a ship called the Discovery. And I was like, well, it is.
She gets there. Yeah.
Just next time.
Yeah. Well, it's like Aaron Harberts actually said this on the after show, which we can talk about in a little bit too. But he literally said, well, yeah, this is basically a prelude to the rest of the series. Like, this is not really... this is not exactly like a traditional pilot the way we would think about it, which goes back to Jared's point too about the whole exposition thing. This is not a traditional pilot in this sense. It's almost like here's background about Burnham and how she comes to fall from grace, and then we spend the next 13 episodes like with her in this place, right? So it's different. It's very different than we're used to.
I loved that about it. I feel like they didn't waste time. We got to do more and experience more.
Yeah, me too. It doesn't bother me at all. But I think, again, people who, as we've noticed, people who are really, really, but people who are casual fans, I shouldn't say really, really, people who are casual fans basically looked around 2 weeks ago, anywhere between 2 weeks ago and, yesterday, and went, hey, there's a new Star Trek show. How do I watch it? Who's in it? You know what I mean? It didn't really click for a lot of people until very recently. And so to them, they're just like, well, yeah, but the formula is there's a leading captain, like there's one ship that you follow, right? You know, that sort of thing. So I can see why they'd be like, what's going on?
So I think we need to talk a bit about, we've talked a lot about how well this show did on its own, but how well did it fit into the pre-existing canon? Because I know you guys all have some thoughts about that.
Okay, so the Klingons did not invent cloaking devices. They got cloaking devices from their strategic relationship with the Romulans, which happened in TOS.
That's the biggest problem.
Yeah. Holy cow.
Yep, that's the biggest fudging of canon that I would say it's really a problem in a way, is that.
Yeah.
Brian, I know you have some thoughts on this because I'm curious to see how much we agree or disagree on it. Like talking about, for example, the visual canon.
I if you want to fudge a visual canon, I guess that's fine. But I just don't know how this possibly fits into the Prime timeline in any way.
It
looks nothing like anything.
It felt very Kelvin-verse-y, just from the production values.
Yeah, which is fine. I, as its own thing, it's totally fine. The sets are absolutely beautiful. And the monitors and... the schematics and the ship on the readouts and everything are absolutely stunning, like beautifully crafted, unbelievable craftsmanship. But it's they're trying to wedge it into something that pre-exists, and it just like I don't know how you make the Prime timeline work anymore.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It is really hard
I'm not even talking about TOS actually. Yeah. I mean the original series is 50 years old with rinky dink sets. You know, as we've discussed before. That was not going to be anything. They were not going to build anything resembling that, and that's totally understandable. Yeah. But they went so far out of the way. Like to me, like it's this show looks like it takes place 30 or 40 years after TNG.
Yeah, which makes you say, why wouldn't they just set it then?
Well, but you know the reasons why. There's a few. There's real world and there's in-universe reasons. And we've talked about this before too, but I guess I'll be the guy that says it. One, by the time you get to late 24th century, a whole bunch of stuff is basically magic. We have We have lots of replicators, really great medical tech. I mean, it basically doesn't matter. We've already survived the Borg threat multiple times. We've already survived the Dominion. I mean, like, whatever, right? Like, meh. And it's funny, too, because a lot of people will say, and I think they say this off the cuff without really considering the implications, yeah, I said it post, like, Voyager, you know, post-Nemesis, all this stuff. And it's like, sure, but then what? Remember what Voyager brought home? Really fancy ablative armoring, thanks to Admiral Jim. All this, all that. It's like, what the hell can you do? You can't. So that's why, Brian, I see exactly what you say. Well, the prime timeline in general is very stuffed full, and you can't really, like, what do? Right? Like, where do you go? On either end of the spectrum, right? Like, as a prequel or a sequel, where the heck do you go? So it is almost impossible. Which, by the way, I don't think either of us are arguing that they should make a Kelvin universe thing. We're just saying it's very hard to do in the prime.
Yeah. I mean, when Enterprise came out and you saw how, like, Herman Zimmerman basically had to, like, twist himself in knots to get that ship to look kind of, like, pre-TOS. And that kind of highlighted the absurdity of, like, trying to continue, like, basing everything off a 50-year-old TV show.
Yeah,
exactly. I remember watching the pilot with a friend of mine, and we were, after it was over, we were talking about it and everything. And I said, I think after this, they have to figure out a whole different direction to go. And I didn't know there were going to be movies or anything like that. But I said, this new show kind of highlights the absurdity of trying to pretend that it's taking place, you know, 100 years before Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise. And meanwhile, the tech looks kind of more advanced, but it does, like, it just doesn't, it doesn't feel like it fits any,
it's one of the problems you have with any kind of prequel.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
because the Enterprise
bridge, but particularly something like the original series, which is so old and so dated looking.
And, you know, we talked about this a little bit. I actually think the color scheme of the bridge as it was in the cage fits better today with modern sensibility than the colorful one does, and the colorful, you know, series version does, because we're into steely colors, like, as a sort of fad of, like, what sci-fi we think looks like in, you know, the 2010s, right? We think steely colors are where it's at, and so it's really kind of interesting to think that the original paint job on the bridge in 1964 is actually closer to, you know, fits better with what we all, I guess, pop culture envisions the future to look like. It's kind of interesting, kind of amusing. I don't know what we do with that, just interesting, you know?
So I am hearing, like, all of your guys' thoughts, and I think they're all completely valid and definitely something I'm wanting to think more about. But again, like, initial reactions, I don't have a problem with the visual canon being thrown out the window. Because
I'll agree with that. It doesn't really bother me.
Well, I knew, like, when, like, Brian, when you say, I think where we diverge is in when you say that this can't be prime timeline, because I don't have a problem. Like, I'm looking back at all the series that have come before. I feel like I always sort of adjust my view. I put on, you know, different color glasses depending on which series I'm watching, be it TOS. Because if you look at, like, TOS and TNG, you can already, there's already, even though they're set apart quite a lot, even in universe time, you could still see, like, the inconsistencies. And so
change from motion picture to Wrath of Khan, there's some inconsistencies.
And I was always, because, like, I guess I grew up in a world where those inconsistencies existed by the time I was born. You know what I mean? Like, that's what Trek was by the time I started watching it. And so it never, that's just part of what Trek is to me. And so I don't know if that's the explanation for why I agree with that. Seem to let it slide a little bit more maybe than you guys.
But yeah, like, I totally agree with that.
I think this, I have no problem with this being prime timeline. I think it is prime timeline. I think it has to be. I think, like, from a story, if you take away the paint that's on top of it and you look at the story underlying it, I'm very happy with it being 10 years before Kirk and Spock.
Yeah, I guess it just depends, like, what, like you say, what glasses you put on, because it just depends. Like, if I use my real world glasses objectively, like, Yeah, of course. This is a 2017 idea of what the future looks like. And a whole lot of other shows think that too. Like, this is not a unique, like, perspective. Which maybe right. that's a problem, right? We
sort guys, of. But that's why you reboot. That's why you don't stay in this prime time
but
anymore.
No, when, that would have been stupid. When,
see, I don't think so. I think the prime time. I liked when Bad Robot rebooted because I thought Prime was finished.
Fair enough. I think
I
for the
was,
movies,
I thought it was cluttered and it made things hard. It
although
made it hard
to be
to
fair, the implementation of the Kelvin timeline is just as messy and just as cluttered. Thanks to
oh no,
to
it's
the,
very haphazard, yeah. but the principle behind it was good.
Right.
I agree. I think rebooting it for the movies and doing that, and if you're going to go do Kirk and Spock, you have to reboot it. That I thought was done actually in a very clever way that let mm-hmm. them fit right
in
into
universe.
The world of canon. Yeah. While telling brand new stories in a brand new
yep.
empty universe. I was fine with that. But I don't need, I'm sorry,
yep,
I don't
too.
Need three timelines. I think, like, yeah. we're going to get timeline fatigue.
Kayla, this is no time to talk about the timelines.
To talk about time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't like the way Starfleet's depicted in the show either.
Well, so far.
It's very dark and very dark.
Oh, okay. Do you mean visually or tonally or both?
Visually, yeah. I mean, that tribunal that they put Burnham in front
that
of.
That was weird.
I thought they were going to, like, shoot lightning bolts out of their eyes and electrocute her
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
That was
or,
stupid.
Or
also,
put her
okay.
in some kind of, yeah.
Wait, can we talk about this for 2 seconds? Because that, please. Matt and I were actually sitting next to each other watching this episode because Matt happened to be out visiting here in the Phoenix area, so we were able to watch it together, which was great. But Matt, do you remember me turning to you and going,
yep.
What the fuck?
Yep.
After they
that's
were
exactly.
like, we sentenced you to life imprisonment. It's like, wait, what?
It was the weirdest. And we've talked about this today. We're just talking about it in Slack a little bit today. The entire thing went from being like, you know, a grounded, like, you know, modern but grounded style to suddenly this really weird, shadowy style that you would see in a sort of theater production or... it very much reminds me of some kind of Outer Limits or Twilight Zone kind of thing where they were using because it was in black and white and they were using a lot of shadow and they're trying to be very
oh,
dramatic
sure.
and very, you know,
making up for the limitations of a lack of budget.
Exactly. And we don't need to do that here. And why did it get really weird? And why are these people who these Starfleet admirals who should be, you know, on the up and up, why are they cloaking themselves in darkness? Like, that's
and
really
weird. Why are they sentencing people to life in prison? Is that a thing that Starfleet
well, that
does?
Is a thing, potentially. I was trying to research that before,
like,
we started this.
In the,
I don't
like,
think we've seen anyone sentenced.
Court-martial, maybe. Like, stripped of rank, blah, great. But, like, life in prison?
I mean,
I would have sent her.
Yeah, I mean,
are you kidding? She mutinied. I would have thrown her in jail for life.
The implication is that they don't say it, but the implication with Ro is that she was there for life until she was bailed out because of the Bajoran situation. They don't say it directly, but
how
she
are we,
was at.
How are we living
so
in a
happens.
World where we're so enlightened and we're so evolved, and yet we still imprison people for life? Like, that just seems really like not Trek.
Well, they had a death penalty in Star Trek, too.
Yeah, that's true.
If you went to Talos IV, you got executed.
Yeah.
It's the only thing in the books.
Yep.
Which, by the way, that just happened two years before this takes place. So this maybe is an indicator that we are at a different point in time with Starfleet. Like, people, this is a little harsher, right? And you could kind of start to see why maybe it's okay that these guys, everybody's a little harsher in this reality. Things are a little more leaning towards the war side, you know, leaning more towards the military side. Is because maybe that's just where we are, which is kind of course, what these guys are trying to argue, you know, the new current showrunners, is like, yes, things are a little darker because it's just a little bit darker period in history, right? I don't know if that's, you know,
no.
I don't know if we all buy that, but
you know what?
You
yeah.
can start to see the seeds sort of sown.
I have to admit, you've talked me down a little bit. I still think the shadow people were stupid.
The shadow thing was dumb.
I don't think that was appropriate
at all.
On the story side of things, you talked me down off a ledge a little bit there, so I appreciate that.
Well, that's what we do here. We seek to enlighten.
My thought to that is they filmed that so dramatically to reinforce, like, this is how Burnham feels right now. Like, she's kind of shut down.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. But that's very stagey of them. That's
more like a stage play than a TV show.
Yeah. That's a good point, Jared. But, yeah, I see, like, why.
They could have done that while keeping the house lights up. You know what I mean? They didn't need to do that. There's other ways to portray that.
So Brian, I'm curious, are you, like, how do you feel about this? Because this is, like, such an important sticking point for me. I'm, like, so curious, like, of what, like, your guys' final thoughts are on this. Are you still, like, the jury's out, or you're just, like, this isn't prime timeline for me?
No, I'm willing to give the show more time to figure out what it is. I mean, look, I can live with the visual inconsistencies. I don't like the tech inconsistencies, but I can live with the visual ones. That's not that big of a deal. My objections to the show currently, more than anything, is its tone and the fact that it's all about Klingons.
Well, and the good news is we know that they don't want to do that for season two. They're done. So they've said that repeatedly now. So at least there's that. You don't like it this season. Hopefully season two, if there is one, is different, you know?
So, all right, guys, we promised ourselves we would try to keep this short. And of course we didn't. But I do still want to talk about the after show, because this is another brand new thing that we got to see last night. And in fact, Brian was actually there at the after show.
I was indeed.
So do tell. Myself, what was your experience like?
I was there with another one of our colleagues, Joe Andoska, who is our comic editor, comic reviewer editor. And our colleague, Laurie Ulster, is one of the producers on the show.
Oh, cool.
Which is how we got there. We had a blast. You come in, they serve us alcohol. We were drinking Romulan ale.
Nice.
We were only using it for medicinal purposes.
Of course.
And, you know, everybody sat down. We watched the first couple of hours. And they took us into a very, very tiny area. I mean, there was not like a traditional audience area. We were kind of squeezed onto a bunch of benches on the side. You're there to be heard, not seen, really. As I'm sure if any of you were watching it last night, you did not see the audience at all.
Yeah,
you could hear us, but you couldn't see
us. I was kind of hoping they'd do at least one pan across people, but no.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So if any of you end up going to this thing, you expect to, you know, to be able to wave to your friends or your parents, it's not going to happen. But we had a great time. We met Matt Mira, the host of the show. Matt's a big fan of Star Trek. He's a really nice guy. He was talking up everybody. He's very funny, very quick. And the show itself, we had a lot. We really enjoyed it. It went very quickly, I thought. Like, you know, they kept things moving and the conversation was lively. And Matt is a pro. Like, he just knows how to keep things going and keeps you, your attention never wavers. He's very, very good at that.
Yeah, and he's a kind of colleague and friend of Chris Hardwick, and has been doing stuff with and associated with him for years. So it shows that he's used to this kind of thing.
Yeah, he was really, really good. The guests were cool. It was Joe and I got to meet Aaron Harberts and James Frayne afterwards. Oh, they were both cool. Really cool.
That's cool. Really cool.
The set is super cool that they built. You know, I don't know if you got to look at it yet, but it's pretty cool looking. There's props on it. They got some giant screens in the background. They could project, you know, whatever they want to back there. They even have like a red alert kind of lighting scheme. So if they want to get goofy with that, which they did last night, you know, they turned it on. You put sound effects on, and like the set, for the tiny little set that it is pretty intricate. So
yeah, it doesn't look small, like, you know, no, on screen. So that's good.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. We really enjoyed it. And if you, any of you out there, and any of you, my friends here, have a chance to go, I would recommend going. It's a fun little unique experience.
Yeah, I was.
What did you guys think of the show itself?
I was pretty. I was pretty impressed with it. I didn't really know what to expect.
I don't think any of us did,
didn't know what the context was going to be. I didn't know what the tone was going to be. I guess I figured it was going to be a little bit jokey and lighthearted, which it was. But yeah, I thought it looked great. I thought it looked super, you know, well produced. It seemed really tight. You know, everyone was like you said, the momentum kept going, and they had, it seems like they just had a ton of material that they were just ready to drop at any moment, and a lot of like interactive stuff and behind the scenes stuff, and there was a lot in there, and it was neat.
Yeah,
and what I didn't realize, which maybe Matt, I think it was maybe you were telling me that, because there are two different tiers of CBS All Access, which is obviously how you have to watch After Trek, and the $6 tier, which includes ads, also includes ads during After Trek, which I didn't realize that the non-ad version, which I have, instead of showing you ads, they show you little like behind the scenes clips and stuff like that. And I didn't realize at first that those were in place of advertisements. So that's like a little more incentive to bump up to that higher, the $10 a month ad-free tier, so that you get a little bit extra content. So that's kind of cool. I, to be honest, I was a little surprised that they put ads on After Trek at all, but if they're going to do that, then I guess offering you extra content instead is good.
Yeah.
Yep. But you guys like the show overall?
Yeah, I thought it was great. And it looked really good. Like Hill was saying, I thought it came off really well. Like it looked really good, looked really, you know, like people had spent some good money on it.
It was well made. Yeah.
Yeah. It was nice to see that they were able to get the entire cast to at least show up for a minute remotely.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone wondered just who they could get, because you just never know who's free. So that was actually really cool.
Right.
And it was cool to have Aaron Harbert's like in studio, because I liked some of the stuff that Matt Meyer is doing. I'm kind of messing with him and talking about various like Vulcan things with James Frayne. There was the really funny stuff about the one bowl, you know, that everyone gets the bowl cut from, and it was pretty good. I mean, like, it's goofy, but it was fun, you know. It was good.
It's great that you got to go to that, Brian.
Yeah, it was a great opportunity, and like I said, if any of you have a chance to do it, I highly recommend it.
Yeah. They do that out of New York, by the way, not LA.
Yes, it's done out of New York, and it's, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the first ever Star Trek talk show.
Huh.
On television, I should say. Sure. There's been plenty of radio shows, but I think it might be the first one on television.
Yeah.
Regular one.
I think so. It's certainly the first after show ever.
Yeah.
So, for that reason alone, it's a really cool
thing.
They're
going where no one has gone before.
Wow.
I will see myself.
Dang. That's deep, though.
except for The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Jared, you're ruining it.
All right.
At least they didn't call it Talking Trek.
Yes, I'm so glad they didn't actually do that. They needed to distinguish themselves.
I wanted to ask briefly, what did everyone think of the title design for the intro?
I liked it. It seems like a lot of people don't like the music. I actually really love the music. I love it seems like a very modern main title sequence. It takes cues from things like Fringe, with the little, like triplets, that's with the strings doing triplets, this is like a very Fringe kind of vibe to me, and also like Westworld with the like engineer drawings showing things coming together,
with the Vitruvian man and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of things, and then it even had a little like Michelangelo / biblical reference, which I thought maybe was, I don't know how that sits with me, having a biblical reference to the creation of Adam in a Star Trek intro was, I thought, a little weird.
I thought that was weird too. It made sense if they did that in Westworld, because it was about, you know, man becoming God by creating life, but that was kind of weird.
Yeah, I was like, do the writers have some kind of God complex? Like, where is this moment of creation?
It,
where does that
It was like
in?
Two spacesuit gloves touching, too,
which
is even weirder in a way.
Which that kind of looks like a weird parody type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that part I think was totally out of place. Like, they really should have rethought that little segment.
Other than that one shot, though, which, to be fair, was actually a quite beautiful shot. But other than that weird call out, I liked the rest of it. I loved when it shows the little Enterprise coming out of this thing, and then it looks like a giant plant. Looks like a big...
Oh, the Discovery, yes.
Yeah, it shows the Discovery, like, flying through, and there's just, like, these big red shapes, and then it kind of, it looks like a The inside of a flower.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my favorite part.
There's one planet shot that looks like someone's wrinkly, dried out elbow. I don't know if you guys.
Oh, that's actually a real place.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, that is Victoria Crater on Mars, which was made famous when Opportunity. No, yes, the Opportunity rover visited there in 2006. And that's a real image of Victoria Crater on Mars.
Okay, thank you. That is a good. That's a good little scientific lesson for me. I just looked at it and said, is that supposed to be someone's elbow?
I was super excited when I saw it because I immediately recognized it as being Martian. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Mars. And, you know, for those who don't know, my husband works on Mars for his job. He works on a satellite that's in orbit around Mars. So he's always looking at pictures of Mars. He can identify, like, any satellite image, cool. Tell you where, which region of Mars it's on and all this stuff. And so I just quickly sent him a screen grab and was like, Mars question mark, and he's like, yep, that's Victoria Crater, and it was blah blah blah, and then he sent me links to all this information about it. So
very cool.
Do we think that this title sequence is good enough that it will get an Emmy nomination?
No, for title I don't design? Think it's that no. outstanding. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I thought it was fine. Yeah,
as you said, it's derivative of others, so I don't think it's like just amazing. Yeah,
no, it feels kind of like you guys were mentioning, it's kind of derivative of other title sequences, you know? And the music is fine. It doesn't blow me away. It's just kind of, it's fine.
Yeah, it sounded more like, it's all like, fine, like, whatever. Like background music.
It felt kind of generic.
Theme. Yeah, very.
Kind yeah, of it bland. Felt very generic to me. Yeah.
Okay, so here's a trivia question. Only one Star Trek series has been nominated for title design. Which one is it?
Voyager?
Yes, Voyager.
Yep,
Voyager?
You got it. Yeah. Yep, Voyager.
Yeah, Voyager's got a great opening.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I was like, don't say Enterprise or I'm going to scream.
No one likes that.
Well, Enterprise's open is very nice. It's the music.
Well,
that's exactly.
Its montage is really great.
By the way,
the montage is beautiful.
It's worth sort of noting that the main titles to Discovery are very Enterprise-y in the visuals, not the music, but the visuals. Did no one else get that vibe?
Yeah.
I didn't.
With the blue uniforms? They're really into this like sketchy the making of things vibe. I don't think it's very connecting to existing space travel vibe that it has.
No, it was very much about its own iconography.
Yeah, I mean they literally like explode. Have an exploded drawing of a TOS phaser, and then it reforms as its predecessor version that we see on the show.
Right,
like that's pretty self indulgent. As you know what I mean? That's pretty like
yeah. Yeah, it is.
But that's okay. I mean, it's fine. I just don't have very... I don't really have any feels for the titles. It's just like, all right, this is a title. I'm going to be skipping it because why do I care? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, no, I'm going to watch it every time.
Oh, well, enjoy.
Thanks. I will. I'll think of you.
You'll think of me.
Every triplet.
Me hitting the little fast forward button. Click.
Yeah. Ba-doop, ba-doop, ba-doop.
Anyway.
That's my TiVo impression.
Yeah, I could tell.
I knew immediately what it was. Yeah,
impressive.
2004.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think they've changed that noise since then.
No, it's their trademark noise. Yeah, it's their trademark.
Yeah, I was about to say it's kind of iconic at this point.
Yeah, it totally is still their noise.
But we digress.
Yes.
Fast forward speaking, I've just not every time I try to do a segue, I try to emulate Jared's segues. I was like, speaking of fast forwarding, let's fast forward on to.
That's good though. Just do it again.
It's not
it's
as
fine.
Good as Jared's.
Oh, it would be fine.
Thank you. No, you'll get there. Hang in there, kiddo. You'll get all there right. Someday.
Thanks. So instead, why don't we just say, next week on the Shuttle Pod at the Disco, we will talk about episode 3. Context is for Kings, which is the title of episode 3 of Star Trek Discovery, to be released on October 1st in the US and Canada. We don't have an episode description so far, so the meaning of the title is anyone's guess at this point. But I will note, stealing a sentence here from an article that we have up on Trek Movie, there isn't a alliterative similarity to the original series episode titled The Conscience of the King.
Mm.
which I thought was an interesting note. I didn't even think of that when I first saw the title. So,
it does seem like that title is not an accident.
Yeah, you would think so, right? Yeah, like definitely deliberate.
And we know that this is almost like another pilot. Aaron Herbert said as much, that now that we've seen Burnham and her fall from grace, we can sort of move forward. So this third episode is almost like another pilot, in the sense that now we see where she goes, you know, where she ends up.
And we do know that, right, this is, we actually get to meet the crew of the Discovery and see finally for the first time the titular ship of Star Trek Discovery.
Yep. It should be, yeah.
All right, well, until next time, you guys, this is Shuttlepod at the Disco, and until November, we will be talking about each episode of Star Trek Discovery right after it airs, airing our likes, dislikes, grievances, etc. So I guess that's it for me. I'm Kayla. I'm here with Brian, Jared, and Matt, and as always, we'll see you next time on Shuttlepod at the Disco.
Bye, everybody.